Upper Iowa University has 10,000 students worldwide, but only 1,000 of them study in the northeast Iowa town of Fayette, where it's based. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we continue our summer series of conversations with Iowa University and college presidents. In the first half hour, a conversation with Upper Iowa University President Alan Walker. We'll find out about the university's global reach from the small town of Fayette. Then a conversation with President Darrell Colson of Wartburg College in Waverly. We'll ask about that institution's success and why they emphasize community engagement. That's all coming up after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and my next guest is Alan Walker, president of Upper Iowa University. Upper Iowa University is a private university, and it's located in the town of Fayette in northeast Iowa. And this is part of our summer series of conversations with Iowa University and college presidents. President Walker, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, since this is the first time that we focused on Upper Iowa University in this series, why don't you start off by introducing us to your university and the community of Fayette?
Well, you began by mentioning that Upper Iowa is a private university. We are. We're a nonprofit private university. Our main campus is located here in Fayette, Iowa, where Upper Iowa was founded 155 years ago. But today, we also have over 20 physical locations in the U.S. as well as overseas in places like Hong Kong, Malaysia, Singapore. We also have about 3,000 students who are studying online for degrees that they can earn completely online and or through independent study. There are about 20 majors that they can choose from in that venue. And then, of course, we have our main campus here in Fayette, which takes on the look and feel of a very traditional university that you would find in the Midwest.
Yeah, let's talk about the global nature of your university. As you mentioned, you have students worldwide, 10,000 students worldwide, approximately 1,000 in the town of Fayette. Other locations in Iowa, also Minnesota, Illinois, Kansas, Louisiana, around the U.S. You mentioned Hong Kong, Malaysia, Singapore. What is the thinking behind that, that really spread out structure?
Well, and you know, Ben, that's what makes Upper Iowa unique among private and public colleges, not only in Iowa, but in the region and even in the country. There are very few American universities that have in-country operations on the ground like we do in places like Hong Kong and Malaysia, where we have physical locations where we're delivering complete degree programs at the undergraduate level, a number of different majors being offered, where we have students there, we have faculty and staff there, and essentially we're running a center there, much like our centers in the U.S. that we have in other locations in Iowa and the other states you mentioned. This didn't happen overnight, Ben. Upper Iowa has been in the business of academic extension, which is taking academic programs off of the principal campus and offering them in their entirety in other locations or digitally, electronically online through the web. Our academic extension system began actually in the early 70s. Upper Iowa was one of the first pioneers to do this kind of thing. Of course, back in that day, you didn't have the technology that you have today. But that has grown and evolved over time to the number of centers that we've mentioned and to our online program and even our locations overseas, which have now actually been around for about 15 years. So we're not a newcomer to this, but we've definitely are a leader in terms of taking a very traditional higher educational experience and offering it in a number of different modalities to meet the different needs of our constituents.
Now, are there also opportunities with this reach around the globe that you have in Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong? Are there opportunities for international students to study here in Fayette?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have it really offers a number of opportunities, unique opportunities. We have about 29 different countries represented here on the Fayette campus alone, with about 10% of our student population being international. Some of those students are actually students from our centers in Hong Kong or Malaysia, where they're taking their degree programs, Upper Iowa, they're working on Upper Iowa degrees, and they've decided to come over to Fayette for a semester or two and complete part of their degree program here on the Fayette campus and then return. Some of them come here for a capstone experience and go through graduation. And then, of course, we have students from the Fayette campus that have an opportunity to go to Hong Kong or to Malaysia for a semester or a term and continue on with their studies. And what's unique about it is it's not a student exchange program because these are all Upper Iowa locations run by Upper Iowa University, single a single academic program, a single curriculum. It's all within Upper Iowa University, so it's a very seamless, easy thing for students to do, and faculty, for that matter.
The nice thing about having international students on any campus, I think you'll agree, is that you get a perspective on your own backyard from someone who is from somewhere else. Now, I bet you've heard some interesting comments about what is surprising or unique or interesting about Northeast Iowa, about Fayette, about your university.
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, Ben, I think you and the listeners out there can fully appreciate that one of the things that we're trying to do as a university is to prepare our graduates to be successful out there in the world. And we know that out there in the world, the world is flat. The world is global. The world is competitive. We know that many of our graduates are going to be working for companies that do business globally and or compete globally, and they need to be prepared for that. And one of the ways that we prepare our students for that experience and to be successful in that kind of environment, competitively global environment, is to expose them to the kind of diversity that we can here on the Fayette campus and the kind of diversity we can provide them as experiences because we have these physical locations in other countries. We think that's just as important for students in the Midwest, in Iowa, even students who've grown up in a rural setting. We think it's just as important for them as it is students who live in a big city.
Mm-hmm. With all these opportunities and the plus factors you've mentioned about Upper Iowa University, what would you say are the chief challenges you face right now?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And clearly, higher education, both on the public side and the private side, has been under a lot of stress in the last few years with the recession and even before that. Public higher education has been under a lot of fiscal pressure because in most states, state support for higher ed has been cut. That's certainly true here in Iowa. It's been cut even more drastically in other states. Even for private institutions, it's been a challenge because some institutions who have large endowments over time have come to rely on the earned interest from those endowments to augment their annual operating budget. And when people lost 20 or 30% on those portfolios a few years ago when the recession hit, private institutions found themselves caught in that squeeze as well. You know, Upper Iowa stands as a stark contrast to that whole scenario. We're actually experiencing very robust times right now, fiscally, enrollment-wise, and the reason for that is because we have a very diversified revenue stream. It's not just dependent on an endowment. It's not just dependent on traditional students on the Fayette campus here, but that diversified revenue stream also is produced by our international centers, our online enrollments. So having that diversified revenue stream, it's sort of like having a balanced stock portfolio. If one segment weakens, the others continue to support the portfolio, and that's that's the reason why Upper Iowa is in an unprecedented mode of growth right now. We have doubled the university's budget in the last few years. We're just nearing completion of $100 million in new construction and major renovations. We've doubled the number of full-time tenure track faculty in the last few years. And the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So we find ourselves in a very unique position of growth and prosperity at a time when that's unusual.
Mm-hmm. So you're really the flip side of something that we've talked about on this program concerning, for instance, the University of Northern Iowa, a university that has a predominantly Iowa-based a student body. You are the flip side with maybe 10% of your student body from Iowa.
No, actually, the 10% of our student body here on the Fayette campus is actually international students.
So even less than that.
Yeah, no, the percentage of Iowa students here on the Fayette campus is still, it's running about 50%,
uh-huh.
And then another 10% international students, and then the balance are students from mainly contiguous states to Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, states like that. So when you come onto the Fayette campus, it still has the look and feel very much of a Midwestern campus that you would find in other parts of the Midwest.
If you've just joined us on River to River, my guest in this portion of the program is Alan Walker, president of Upper Iowa University. That's a nonprofit, a private university, a nonprofit university located in Fayette, the town of Fayette in northeast Iowa. So while we're on the topic of financial health, tell us, how much does it cost to attend Upper Iowa University, President?
You know, great question. And I know, you know, right now in today's economy, higher education represents a very important investment decision as ever before. And we know that. We take that very seriously. One of our legacies here at Upper Iowa is that we, on average, our students graduate with less debt than students on average from any of the region's four-year region institutions and most of the other private institutions in Iowa. And mm-hmm. we pride ourselves on that because we know how important it is to send our students out into the world after they graduate without the huge burden of debt that everyone is concerned about these days. One of the reasons why we're able to do that is we keep our costs very, very low, and we become very affordable through the financial aid packages that mm-hmm. we're able to offer students, scholarship programs, and we have invested very heavily in scholarships. We've increased the funding for our internal scholarship programs by almost 800% since 2004 through fundraising and through our generous donors. So those are, you know, those are some
can you,
of the
can
things.
You give me a round number or two about what it does cost for a year of education at Upper Iowa?
Sure can. After it's all said and done, by the time students on average come in with external financial aid and our own financial aid that we can offer, scholarships that we can offer, and so forth, the average out-of-pocket cost for tuition on an annual basis for a full-time student here on the Fayette campus runs about $6,000, not including room and board.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think you'll find that that's pretty competitive. And one of the interesting things that's happening around the country is the gap, the traditional gap that has existed between the out-of-pocket actual costs to go to a private institution versus public institutions is narrowing pretty quickly as the public institutions have to increase their tuition rates to make up for the budget cuts that we were talking about earlier.
I understand that Upper Iowa University also has a course structure that's not typical of the university experience. There are 6-week courses. How does it work?
Yeah, great point, Ben. The way it works is we take, semesters are traditionally a 16-week, and traditionally students would take anywhere from 5 to 6 courses each semester, running to, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3 credits and so forth. Instead of that 16-week semester, we divided it into 2 8-week terms. And students, instead of taking 5 or 6 courses in a semester, they take 2 or 3 courses per term.
Mm-hmm.
And then graduate in 4 years doing that. One of the
well, why is that structure better, you think?
I think when you think about it, I know when I look back on my college days and I think about, you know, having to study at the same time 5 to 7 different subjects at a time, take 5 to 6 midterms at a time, take 5 or 6 finals all in finals week. You remember how crazy all that was.
Yeah.
It makes more sense when you think about it that you learn more, it's easier to focus when you only have to focus on 2 or 3 different subjects at a time.
Right.
And we actually have empirical evidence that our students do better academically because of that. I mean, they do better because of that. They do better because we have full-time faculty, small class sizes, and other reasons as well. But we actually measure certain skills and abilities and attributes of incoming freshmen and compare that to when they're seniors, and we measure that difference, and we compare that difference to about 300 or 400 other colleges and universities around the country. And that difference, that value added that Upper Iowa offers our students, has put us in about the top 25% of those institutions for the last several years.
What have alumni of Upper Iowa gone on to do? Can you name some names and tell us some career paths that have been followed after leaving?
Sure can. One of our more prominent alums, for example, was Bill and Betty Andries, both graduates of Upper Iowa. Betty Andries has been on our Board of Trustees. She's an emeriti of the board right now. She got her degree here in education. Her husband, Bill, got a degree in business. His family operated a mercantile store here in Fayette. Bill later went on to join the Dayton Hudson Corporation, which a lot of people might not recognize, but the Dayton Hudson Corporation was the parent company for something they might recognize, and Bill Andries had a leading role in helping to establish this, and that was Target Stores.
Mm.
And he was the CEO of Target, and the Andries family have been very generous over the years to Upper Iowa. Another famous alum, going back a little bit in history, David Henderson, first Speaker of the House west of the Mississippi, also was one of the university recruits who joined the Union Army when the Civil War broke out, along with all the other male students at Upper Iowa, except two, and were constituted the university recruits and fought in the Civil War. Mr. Henderson later went on in politics and was very successful. That's another one. And, you know, the list goes on. We've had Nobel Prize winners. We've had one of our graduates was one of the scholars who helped decipher the Dead Sea Scrolls. And like I said, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm. It's a
long legacy here of 155 years of great education and great alums.
Upper Iowa University established way back in 1857. I'm speaking with its current president, Alan Walker. Established shortly after Iowa achieved statehood. What can you tell us more about the founding of Upper Iowa University?
Yeah, you know, the credit goes to a person by the name of Elizabeth Alexander, who was one of the first families here in the Fayette area. She had two daughters, and she came time to send them to college. The closest college that she would have sent them to would have been Cornell College, because back then, Cornell College and Upper Iowa were both sponsored by the same Methodist conference. But back in that day, Cornell College was quite a wagon ride from here. And so she was hesitant to do that and wanted to start a school here in Fayette. So she got some people together, and that's how it all got started. It was originally affiliated with the Methodist Church, and it remained so until about the 1920s when we became an independent private university. But that's how it all got started, Elizabeth Alexander.
Upper Iowa University is an NCAA Division II school. Your teams are known as the Peacocks.
Great. It's an unusual mascot, isn't it?
Where did that come from? I've marveled at your logo just a few minutes ago online. A beautiful logo. Where did it come from?
Well, it's a great story. First of all, we're only one of two schools in the nation with that particular mascot. There's another one back east, and I don't recall which one it is. But and it's very interesting that it turned out to be the peacocks, given that in Asia, in places like Hong Kong and Malaysia, where we have centers, the peacock is a revered, respected bird. Also has a reputation for being quite fierce and a defender of its territory. And interestingly enough, we weren't actually named after the bird. It was originally, the story was that back at around the turn of the century, the university still had not adopted its official colors, and some students got together to do that, to pick out colors. And one of the colors that they picked out was white. The other color that they picked out that they wanted to go with as the official school color was a shade of blue called peacock blue. And so it's really named after a shade of blue, and just it later went on to become peacocks, because as the athletic teams adopted that shade of blue for their uniforms, people would say, "Oh, here come the peacocks," and they were referring to that shade of blue. And eventually, it evolved to become the mascot, which was the actual bird.
Tell us a little bit about your background, if you would, please, President Walker. How did you come to this position? I understand that you were once a firefighter.
Well, and I still am. I'm a volunteer here with the city of Fayette. I came full circle in my career. I started out as a volunteer firefighter back in the late 70s and had a career associated with the Municipal Fire Service for 20 years, primarily spent training firefighters and allied emergency responders at a variety of academies in a number of states, Idaho, Kansas, Louisiana. Some of those academies were attached to universities, and I became increasingly interested over time in university administration. I finished a PhD in higher education policy and administration from the University of Kansas back in the late 90s, and went on to work my way up through the ranks of university administration. My previous position was at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo as Vice Provost for Academic Affairs. And then there was an opportunity to come here to Upper Iowa. My wife and I came here on a campus visit in March of 2004. We fell in love with the place, and we've never looked back.
It sounds like you're not a native Iowan.
I am not a native Iowan. My father was actually spent a career in the Army, so I was an Army brat, and we moved around quite a bit. Actually, I spent about half of my life growing up overseas in countries like Italy, Turkey, and Germany. So one of the things, frankly, that attracted me to Upper Iowa was its international footprint, because I'd had such an international upbringing.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Alan Walker, president of Upper Iowa University, and we appreciate you, you telling us a little bit about your university in Northeast Iowa. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Ben. It's been a great opportunity to join with you and your listeners. It's a great day to be a peacock.
Okay. Do they have a call?
They do, but don't ask me to try it.
What does it sound like?
It's sort of like a cross between a crow and, I'm not sure. It's very unusual.
Okay, if we don't get the call, do we get the consolation prize as the school song?
No, you don't.
Okay. Next time, you're on notice, President.
Okay, fair enough. That's fair enough.
Coming up, as we continue our summer series of conversations with Iowa University and college presidents, a conversation with the president of Wartburg College in Waverly, Daryl Colson. That's after this break. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're continuing with our summer series of conversations with Iowa University and college presidents this hour. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and joining me now is Daryl Colson, president of Wartburg College in Waverly. Welcome to our program, President Colson.
Thanks very much, Ben. I'm glad to be with you.
Wartburg is a private liberal arts college, has currently, as I see, some 1,800 students representing those students from 29 states, 49 countries represented in the student body. And this is the first time we focused on Wartburg College in this series, so I wonder if you can start us off by telling us a little bit more about your college, what sets it apart, and how it fits in with the community of Waverly.
Oh, okay, good questions, Ben. Wartburg College is as you said, a liberal arts college founded in 1852 by Lutheran immigrants, particularly from Germany. And so we still maintain a strong connection to the Lutheran Church and I think manifest in the things we do a kind of orientation toward education that we derive from Martin Luther himself, who was a college professor. So our approach to education has to do, we think a lot about preparing young people for lives of leadership and service in the world. We think of the world as a needy place, and we think of our students as having a responsibility to improve the world, to serve their communities in many ways when they graduate. So we have a focus on service and a focus on civic responsibility. Mm-hmm. We've always had a wonderful relationship with the city of Waverly. In fact, it was Waverly citizens back in the 1930s who lobbied the Lutheran Church pretty aggressively to place the school here when it was looking for a spot to locate. And from that time, from the 30s till now, we have a tight relationship with the city. We cooperate on a number of ventures. One is that we share with them an athletic facility, which is called the Waverly-Wartburg Fitness Facility, and we cooperate with the city-owned power company on a number of ventures, including a wind turbine. So I think on the whole, what we've got is a tight community here on the college campus oriented towards service, and then we're able to benefit from opportunities to serve the town that surrounds us.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to this emphasis, emphasis from the Lutheran background on service, community engagement. How does that manifest itself if I were a student at Wartburg? What would I be asked to do or be doing that I wouldn't at another a private liberal arts college in the country, perhaps?
I don't necessarily want to talk about our colleagues, but I do want to talk about what we do. And what is a student on our campus, what you would find almost immediately is that not only are there opportunities presented to you to be of service, that is, opportunities to take service learning courses, opportunities to go on service trips during alternative break, that is, instead of going to on vacation during a semester break, you'd be given opportunities to go somewhere.
Within the country or outside the country?
Primarily within the country, but sometimes outside the country.
Mm-hmm. Needy areas within our borders.
I'm sorry?
Needy areas within the borders of the U.S.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it could be within Iowa. It could be we have students who routinely serve in an orphanage in East St. Louis. We have students who routinely serve in the Denver area. We have students who routinely serve in the Carolinas, doing all kinds of projects. It could be building a house for Habitat for Humanity. It could be reading stories to underprivileged kids to give their teachers a break. It could be serving even in an animal refuge and shelter. Now, but I think the interesting thing is not only are these opportunities available, but what I find, and this is the most interesting thing to me, what I find is that the students invite and create the environment in which other students feel obliged and energized to take advantage of these opportunities. So many of these service trips and service opportunities are managed by upper-class students, and they're the ones who are recruiting and encouraging the new students, the underclass students, to participate. So it's not so much something that we who work at the college, the faculty and the staff, are requiring or mandating. It's that the students themselves are expecting it of each other.
So it's almost like a big sister, big brother looking down to the little sister, little brothers to show them the way.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a culture that the students themselves both build and generate and transmit to succeeding generations of students.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm wondering, once a Wartburg College student graduates, is this community service, this engagement, then reflected? Can you see that in the types of jobs that your students, your graduates, go out and get in Iowa or the rest of the country?
Oh, that's an interesting point. I was just talking with somebody a few minutes ago about that very thing. Yes, we can see it. We know that our students are often attracted to opportunities in the service sectors. We have a large I'll give you one example, one curricular example. One of our most well-regarded academic majors is the social work major. In fact, we were the first school in Iowa to have an undergraduate social work major, and it's still one of the few accredited undergraduate majors in the state. And we find that a large number of our students want to major in social work and become, in fact, social workers after they graduate. And that's not only the case with social work majors. We find students in a number of disciplines who are attracted, who are drawn to. In fact, we would use the old-time vocabulary. We would say they have a calling, they have a vocation to mm-hmm. serve in service work.
How did last year's Wartburg grads fare in this tough economy?
I think, well, it's a good question you asked, Ben. We monitor that pretty carefully, and so we're around our graduates. You know, our last class graduated in May, and then about 6 months out, we will survey them and do a sort of formal survey, and then we'll post that survey as we do every year on our website. But the sort of the anecdotal evidence, the reports that I'm getting indicate that they have done reasonably well. We have a very good placement record over time. While it's a tough job market out there, Iowa has fared better than most states. And college graduates fare better than those who don't have a college degree. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the, I guess, blessings that a college graduate in Iowa enjoys. Many of our graduates do, in fact, stay in the state. Probably 70 to 75% do stay in the state. So it's providential, I guess, that they're graduating within a state that has a fairly healthy job market.
Tell us, what is the cost of attending Wartburg for 4 years?
Well, the sticker, I mean, there are two things that we could talk about here. One is the sticker price, and then one is the actual price that students pay. The sticker price would be in the $30,000 range if you include both tuition and fees as well as room and board.
Per year?
Yes, per year. But what students actually pay on average far less than that because we work hard, the college does, to raise money from our generous donors and supporters to provide financial aid for students. As well, many of our students qualify for other sorts of programs, so might qualify for Pell Grants, might qualify for the Iowa Tuition Grant. Mm-hmm. So on whole, a student could expect to pay about, I think on average, about half of what the so-called sticker price or the posted price is.
Something like $15,000 a year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would think right around that level would be what the expectation is. And moreover, some students, of course, pay less depending upon their academic credentials and their financial aid. Some would pay more because that is an average figure. Mm-hmm. I always tell families who are considering college education not to make decisions on the basis of what sticker prices are or what posted prices are of schools. Really, a high school student should apply to all of the colleges and universities to which she feels drawn, with which she feels a comfort level, in which she feels interest. And then go ahead and apply for financial aid, and then wait until all the numbers are back, all the information is back to make that final decision. Students should always play that sequence of events, the application to admission and the application to financial aid, out until the end, so that then they can really make an informed decision about where they would be best served.
As you mentioned earlier, remind our listeners, first of all, my guest this half hour, Darryl Colson, president of Wartburg College in Waverly. Earlier, you mentioned the strong connection that your college has with the Lutheran Church. Wartburg College is, in fact, a college of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the nation's largest Lutheran denomination. How does that Lutheranism shape the academics, the student life on campus?
Another good question, Ben. Well, I think our orientation toward education is informed by that Lutheran heritage, so that when we look at the world, what we see is a world that's in need of repair. It's a broken world in need of repair. When we look at the students who cross our threshold, the students who come to us for education, what we see in them are two things. We see that they have an obligation to serve and to lead in this world, to make the world a better place, to help repair the world, and we understand that they have a calling to some particular role in doing that. And so our job is to prepare them to assume the role that they're going to be called to serve. So we help them give them good preparation academically, both in general education and in specialized education in their majors, and we, throughout their college career, work hard to mentor them. We use that phrase, mentor them. We want to help them discern their calling. We want them to help them discern where in this world they themselves can make the best contribution, whether that's as a social worker, as I mentioned before, or as an investment banker. We want them to understand that there are many vocations into which they could be called, many, many ways in which they could serve, but we want them always to have that sense of serving communities, families, churches, countries, world, neighbors. We want them to be sensitive to that. So it's that orientation, I think, distinguishes a Lutheran institution. Mm-hmm. Moreover, we have an active chapel on campus with professional chaplains on campus. We provide a lot of worship opportunities for students that are connected with the Lutheran Church. Of course, we're open. The college is open to and welcomes students of any faith perspective. Sometimes,
what are the percentages? How many are Lutheran and how many are of different religious backgrounds?
Oh, good. About 30% would be Lutherans, but then about 30% would be Roman Catholics, and then there's a whole range of others. In fact, we've had over the years a number of Muslim students, a number of Hindu students. We don't discriminate on the basis of religion, and we don't expect every student to come here to be a Lutheran. In fact, I myself am not a Lutheran, but we certainly have the orientation, that Lutheran orientation to education, and we offer opportunities for students to explore their faith. In fact, in our mission statement, what we say is we're dedicated to challenging and nurturing students for lives of leadership and service as an expression of their faith and learning. So we always want to be sure that we're offering students the opportunity to explore faith and to develop faith, but we certainly don't require students to conform to any standard that we would mandate.
Darrell Colson, you began serving as president of Wartburg College in July of 2009, I believe. It was a month later, in August of 2009, that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America's churchwide assembly voted to allow gay and lesbian people in committed monogamous relationships to serve as clergy. That was approved back then, but in a close vote, 559 to 451. Has that change in policy at a national level been translated into any changes at Wartburg during your time?
I don't think so, Ben. As I say, we've always created, I think, well, certainly in recorded memory, I guess, in the memory that I enjoy here at the college, we've always been welcoming of all students who can flourish here and who can use this college experience to develop the skills and the knowledge they need to be successful in the world, and then to leave our campus and to serve in the world. So we've never discriminated against students. I'm not sure that that particular decision that had to do specifically with clergy had any effect on what we do as a college campus.
Offering housing to gay couples, for instance.
Oh, well, that's an interesting – we don't have couples housing on the campus, so I guess that would never arise for us. We do have students who are married. They're very few. The vast majority of our student body is in that traditional age group of 18 to 22. Very few of them are married, and the ones who are married don't live on campus. In fact, that's one of the – I guess that's one of the criteria that enables a student to move off campus. So the students we have who are married actually would live in off-campus housing. So I guess that wouldn't – that decision about clergy that was made by the church wouldn't have anything to do with our student body. I don't see that would have an effect.
We should mention before our conversation ends, so Wartburg West, I believe, located in Denver, Colorado, started in the 1980s. You have a location out there. What is the thinking and value of having a location in Denver in this urban setting in Wartburg West?
Well, that's been an interesting program for us, and it started probably 25 or 26 years ago. It was an opportunity. At the time, we were thinking that our students were primarily students from small towns here in Iowa, particularly the northeastern section of Iowa, and we wanted an opportunity for them to spend time in an urban area. Several people on campus had a relationship with people in Denver, so we created what we call Wartburg West, which was in the beginning a very modest program that enabled students to go to Denver, take a few courses in the urban I guess urban living, urban economics, and at the same time do internships in various businesses and agencies out in Denver. That program has grown to the point that now we have, at any one time, anywhere from 20 to 40 students in Denver doing any number of things, both taking courses from our faculty, but also engaged in the community in one way or another. So they could be, we have about 300 internship sites in Denver. So over the years, our students have interned in every place from as in probation offices to stock brokerage firms to high schools and grammar schools. So it's been a remarkable, it's provided a remarkable opportunity for students to experience urban life in a way they wouldn't be able to do in Waverly.
A short comment about sports at Wartburg. Wartburg College is an NCAA Division III school, and this past year won three NCAA championships. Congratulations. What were they?
Oh, thanks very much. We won indoor women's track and field, outdoor women's track and field, and wrestling.
And a bit of trivia to throw in here that my producer, Alex Hoyer, found out. Wartburg College became the first and only school to win two championships on the same day.
Yes, yeah.
Women's indoor track and wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how long that stands, but
yeah.
Very good and unusual, but a great honor to have there, too. The Wartburg is the site of the Archives of Iowa Broadcasting, and it's there because well-known Iowa broadcaster Grant Price, a lot of our listeners will recognize that name from broadcasting history in Iowa. He was a faculty member who developed it, but now Wartburg is a treasure of hardware and programming that is referenced by news media around the nation. How does that work? How does Wartburg support and leverage that archival resource?
Well, we consider it an opportunity for stewardship. Grant was a remarkable guy. I did not ever have the opportunity to meet Grant because he had died about a year before I came to Wartburg. But I've heard so many wonderful things about him in my time here. He mentored so many young journalists in the state and really throughout the country that he has a very high people hold him in very high regard. And his thought at the time was that there was material that had historical importance that was simply being lost to us because a lot of the early recordings were made on, as you know, magnetic tape, and that magnetic tape has a lifetime. And so he began just casually gathering things up to prevent their being destroyed and to prevent their being thrown away. And over time, he had this idea that we could create an archival repository where we could keep this stuff in a secure location and preserve it, both transfer stuff from magnetic tape into a digital format so it wouldn't be lost. And so from our perspective, that's a stewardship responsibility. We have a lot of old material from radio broadcasts and television broadcasts from long ago, and what we want to do is be sure that we can preserve it over time. And it is, as you hinted, it is open for scholars. There are both news organizations and scholars can come to campus and explore the materials and take advantage of it.
Now, Wartburg College recently announced an agreement with the North Iowa Community College in Mason City, and that allows the community college's students to be enrolled at Wartburg. Now, I think these are new for private colleges. These sort of alliances are fairly new anyway. Will similar agreements with other community colleges be made between Wartburg and, say, Hawkeye Tech in Waterloo or Northeast Iowa Community College in Piasta?
Perhaps, Ben. What happened in this particular instance is that there was a special interest in some people at NIAC and a special interest with some people here on Wartburg's campus to see if we could enhance what we were already doing. We do have articulation agreements with a number of community colleges in the state, including the ones you mentioned, but particular people on the ground thought, well, if we can enhance that articulation relationship and elevate it, actually creating opportunities for students to cross-enroll and cross-register, perhaps we can help students persist to graduation. So in some ways, it's an experiment what we're doing with NIAC. We want to see, first of all, we want to see if this can succeed, if we can actually help students learn develop the skills they need to develop progress on track to graduation and use that relationship with both institutions to their advantage. We're certainly interested in expanding that relationship beyond what we're doing with NIAC, but at this point in time, we don't have a negotiation. I should take that back. I think there is a discussion underway with one other school, but it hasn't moved as far as the one with NIAC did.
Okay.
At this point.
President Darrell Colson of Wartburg College in Waverly, thank you for this conversation. One last question. I understand you were born in Venezuela.
That's true, yes.
So what can you tell us about you? Your personality most reflects your Venezuelan heritage.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, really, I moved to this country when I was about 6 years old, and so I can't legitimately lay claim to Venezuelan heritage. Unfortunately, it's a part of my past, and I guess technically I'm a Latino, but I've lived in the United States since I was 6 years old. Became a naturalized citizen when I was about 10. And I am sort of American through and through. I do, of course, have a fondness for I feel a kinship with our international students who are here. As you mentioned, we have students from over 40 countries here on campus. So I always feel a kinship with them because I know a little bit about – I have a dim memory of what it's like to move to the United States.
We have to go. Darrell Colson, thank you very much, president of Wartburg College in Waverly. President, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Ben. I appreciate it.
River to River is produced by Alex Hoyer and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.